Let me introduce myself. My name is Dawei Wang. I'm from Taiwan National Tsinghua University. And actually, I was a postdoc working with Eugene Demmler and Michelle Lukin in Harvard about 2 years ago. So that's the reason I'm doing Kroatan since 4 years ago. Okay, so the talk I want to give today is about the polar molecules in multi-component systems. I think one of the reasons I would like to give a talk this week is that, I mean, after listening that the interest of some of you, that probably most, at least part of the people so far, are interested in some kind of BEC-BCS crossover or things. So I think maybe some of you will be feel interested to know something else, like polar molecules. Of course, we have some experts like Peter here and Dawood, and so probably that will be good for some of you. And then I think after some introduction and to explain my work, then we can have some discussion about possible future directions for this kind of polar molecules. Okay. So I will have a long introduction about polar molecules. So basically, that's half of my talk. And the others, I just introduced three results we have recently in different multilayer systems. One is in bilayer, and one is in multilayer, and the other one is in double wire systems. And there are several interesting phases that I want to introduce to you. But I think, because that's part of my talk before, so I just select some slides and depends on the time. So probably these parts will be shorter. Okay. So why dipoles are interesting? Everyone knows dipoles, right? It's basically just d squared times 1 minus 3 cosine squared theta, where theta is the angle between two dipoles. Okay, then d is a dipole moment, for example, for electric dipole. Okay. There are at least two features for this kind of dipole interaction. One is anisotropic interaction, which means that we have an angle dependence on this interaction. And the second feature is it is a long-range interaction. That, I mean, from the kinesthetic point of view, it goes 1 over r cubed. It is certainly not long-range compared to Coulomb interaction. However, from atomic physics point of view, that it is quite long enough compared to the van der Waals interactions. People know it is basically like 1 over r cubed, r6, right, r to the power of 6. So this is another feature for this dipole interaction. Therefore, the motivation is basically, at least to me, that is to seek thinking for exotic, strongly correlated states for this kind of dipole things. Okay. And then let me talk about something related to experiments, but probably not much. What kind of dipoles we use here? So the first candidates, as I told here, is basically heteronuclear molecules, or say polar molecules. So here is a picture for ammonia, I think. So the feature of these molecules is that it has a very strong direct molecules. Dipole moments. The typical value will be, say, several d-bis. Okay. But the problem is that, okay, it's very difficult to be cooled because there are so many states like vibrations, rotational states. So it's very hard to use laser cooling to cool the system to under, say, 100 millikelvin, for example.
How is this defined?
How do they define?
This 1 to 5 divide.
Well, that depends on what materials, what kind of molecules you use.
But this is when you put on strong enough.
Yes, of course, the maximum.
The maximum one.
Yeah, the maximum one. Well, in principle,
the zero.
If it is in ground state, rotational ground state, then it should be zero.
It's just geometrical, except for
Yeah, no, but usually they are in the rotational ground states, then dipoles just average out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's the maximum whether you can achieve, right? Okay. And but there are, it is
statement that the sort of hard to laser cool, they're impossible to laser cool normally, only a very few exceptions because you need a cycling transition.
Uh-huh.
And you don't have this.
Oh, okay. So you mean it's in general impossible?
Well, there's few exceptions to the impossibility, but
what's the exception?
The part is, yeah, it's impossible.
What's the exceptional?
Well, you need a cycling transition. You know, you have an excited state, and it has to return to the same state, and you have to do it very often for laser cooling to work.
I see.
Why don't we have such conditions in molecules? Too many vibration states?
Yes.
Yes, they're too close.
Down, and then you would have to clean this up and return.
Yes. Okay. But there are still several groups trying to do that by using, say, buffer gates or different way of cooling. Okay. Or, well, basically, you just remember these names and find their papers. So, okay. Another available candidates is for atoms with large magnetic moments. Well, typical core atoms have magnetic moment, but usually it is relatively small. But for some atoms like chromium, it can have a large magnetic moment, like 6-4 megaton. But I say it is still small because if we calculate the energy scale, so for typical electric dipole moment with 1 dipole, for example, with a typical density, then the interaction energy can be 10 microkelvin, which is very good. I mean, compared to the cooling technique they have, I mean, they will have in the future. Okay, so it is a good candidate for dipole. I mean, because we want the dipole interaction to be strong. On the other hand, for magnetic dipole, for 1 bond magneton, the typical interaction energy is just about, say, 1 nanokelvin, which is pretty small. So that's why we don't expect too much about this atoms with large magnetic moment. Of course, that depends on which group you belong to. But the advantage is that it is ready to go now. Okay. Another, of course, before I say that, there should be another two candidates that people can make. One is the river atom, which is to pump a neutral atom and let the electron to go very far away from the nuclear. So you make it electric dipole, right? But this kind of atom is very unstable in general, and very fragile. So people are still working on it. And another way is to make dipole is to apply strong electric field, static electric field, just to force the atom, neutral atom, to be polarized somehow. However, I mean, I think that it is some kind of not very realistic because you need very, very strong electric field, say 100 kilovolt per centimeter, say to polarize the neutral atoms. So that's why I didn't show it here.
Is the Rydberg atom so unstable? I mean, the lifetime gets longer the higher you go.
Really?
Yes.
But I had an impression from experimenters that when they collide or cooling, so in principle it can be very stable. I see.
That's what you do.
I see. Okay, thank you. Who said it?
The lifetime actually goes up if you go with a single Rydberg atom up the ladder. The lifetime increases.
Oh, okay. So for a single one?
For a single one, yeah.
I see. Okay. So why it doesn't relax? You just keep pumping?
No. The lifetime, you know, it's like this, that if you got an electron, so it's in your four orbits, it's an elliptic orbit. It can only radiate when it's accelerated, which is close to the nucleus. But if orbiting, sees the nucleus infrequently, so the lifetime increases if you go up.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. But here, okay, thanks, Peter. And here I also introduced another candidate called artificial dipoles, which can be made by, say, for example, phage bar resonance. So every of us know that you have molecules when you go to the BEC size, but maybe we can also have molecules for heteronuclear or for different kinds of atoms. However, the disadvantage is that usually it's not in the ground state, and also the dipole moment is very short. Okay, Another possibility is that by photon association, which to use different photons. That's what I don't understand very clearly. Basically, just use Raman-like pulse to excite atoms to some high excitation state and then relax to some low energy state, then do it again and again. And finally, if you calculate, I mean, very precisely and do it carefully, you can allow these two atoms to combine together in the lowest vibration state. That means the real atoms stable in the nature. So they can make atoms in your group, something like this. So that's a very good candidate. And if you could cool these two atoms together at the same time, then do photo oscillation, then you can cool the molecules directly. But okay, but of course different groups have different problems. But so far I think they are very, I mean, they think they are very confident to do that in a few years. Okay.
What's the transition you're
adding to? Well, there are so many levels and between these two atoms. When they scatter once, that's a closed channel, right? That's open channels.
There's so an electronic transition.
Electronic transition. Yeah.
Then you want to come down.
Because for molecules, they share electrons, right? So you just pump it to some certain state. But the fraction, the number of atoms is still not too much, say 1,000, according to de Mille. So their problem is how to make it more efficient to produce such kind of molecules.
And they could. The experiment here, was it the laser going down, or was it spontaneous emission?
Yeah, I think that's spontaneous emission.
How many molecules did they produce in
this? David told me that so far they could have, say, few thousand. Yeah, but the problem is that they haven't had a BC yet. So they just do the thermal
to make them more insulated, two species, and they're very strongly confined, and then this process becomes quite efficient.
Oh, yeah, right, I remember your paper, yes. But well, the problem is they haven't had a PEC yet, okay, so even optical artists. So.
That state that you go down to from in process B, what is that? That's some kind of vibrational
thing? You can see that's a free particle state. So this kind of some kind of vibration state or some high energy bound state, then keep bounding to another state and then goes down. So you have to calculate the energy level first and then tune your laser to certain frequencies to make it.
How stable are they?
How stable? Yeah, just like a regular molecule. But in nature, these two atoms, there's no way for these two atoms to combine together, right? But when you make it, then it just be there.
It's a two-step process because the Frank-Condon factors for going straight down to the bottom aren't that favorable. So you make
the
first molecule that sort of begins to pile up the wave function at close distance, and then the second very small molecule is the last step.
Uh-huh. Or some people may use the Fischbach resonance to make molecules at this stage, then do optical things to associated. So, yeah. Okay. So now let me introduce some theoretical work before. Okay. So here is a picture for condensate of chromium. Okay, it is about 2 years ago, and. So now they could also see the dipole effects, even though the dipole interaction is pretty weak in this kind of systems. But they could still see the aspect ratio are different from what people expect before in non-dipole systems. And there are a series of theoretical work. They just expanded, right, and they can measure the aspect ratio. And they could check that. I mean, you can also calculate it. I mean, assume that there's no dipole interaction. So you can compare these results and see how the dipole. Well, dipole always try to make the shape a little bit like elliptic. Yeah. So they do see the dipole effect, but probably not much.
This is in presence of a magnetic field.
Yeah, the polarized. Yeah. And there are also series of theoretical words. I mean, there must be some names I missed here. But okay. Well, the first important approach I think is by Yu in Georgia Tech. Basically, he proposed that because when we talk about core atoms, we know that interaction, the real interaction in itself is very complicated, but we just replace it by a shoot-up potential, which is controlled by a single scattering length. He also proposed that for dipole scenes, maybe you can use such kind of shoot-up potential, which is including some S-wave scattering and also dipole parts. Okay, so that's, I have to say, that's a shoot-up potential, not a real potential. And so most of people just follow this kind of shoot-up potential to do their mean field or even some different calculations. And under this kind of shoot-up potential, one can show that, I mean, it's mean field or Thomas Fermi profile. It still looks like a regular Thomas Fermi, what people expect before. Of course, the ratio between these two radius are different from non-dipole atoms. Okay. And I have to say, there are still many papers about these kind of things. Well, but just because I think I would like to say something else beyond condensate. Okay, another interesting thing is about phonons and some instability in 3D systems. You can from this figure, you can see that if dipole moment is stronger enough, then they try to line up, and there is some instability for these two atoms or two molecules to form bigger molecules, and then eventually disappear. So that's called instability. Another interesting is that in 1D or 2D systems, for example, these figures for 2D, and your dipole moment is perpendicular to the layer, they use this kind of shoot-up potential to predict that your phonon excitation may have a rotor minimum at some finite wavelengths. Okay, so that's of course also something quite interesting, but that's totally different from liquid helium.
In 1D,
they also see something like this. That depends on your angle and something. Yeah. Well, yeah.
It doesn't happen in
3-dimension. Yes, 3-dimension. Oh, I take it off. For 3-dimension, no. You. Okay. Think about this question. What's the length scale here? So the length scale is set by the width of the layer. You can think about this. If you have two atoms collide together, if you have very tiny width, so it's very hard on top of each other to gain energy, right? So for this kind of excitation, it means that if you have a certain wavelength, okay, you gain some energy. That means you have to overcome the barriers for two atoms on top of each other. But on 3D, for 3D, then you don't have such things.
Let me understand. So in all these calculations, the effect of 1 and 2D, this confinement, basically you can find in particle motion. But then,
yeah.
whether this confinement, does this confinement...
They use 3D shoot-up potential.
Does this confinement have any effect on the orientation of dipole? For example, suppose you have a very thin layer, and then dipole itself, tend to lie. I mean, they don't want the wall. They don't want to lie perpendicular to the layer. So there's an orientation effect of the potential. So I was wondering whether.
No, I don't think they consider that. Basically, just still in the mean field approximation. Yeah. They assume the dipole is always perpendicular. I mean, parallel to each other. Due to external.
I meant by this about the single dipole seeing the external potential. The question is what is the effect of external potential? If the potential itself here in narrow confinement basically act as an electric field pointing in both directions. So
yes.
therefore the confinement itself has orientation
of the electric field.
And the smaller the confinement, the stronger this effect.
No, I don't think they considered it.
But the optical trap, for example, would not touch this electric dipole moment of this molecule, because this talks of microwave radiation, whereas the other one could be an optical trap. So you think that the trap would coupled to the orientation of the dipole moment? How could this happen?
It's a function. For example, if the case I'm very familiar with is EMC, the particle running around, so even the surface of the wall in Hong, however gentle potential, has an orientation effect on the dipole. So here, suppose that here's a potential gradient. If the wall like this and a dipole, it's better the dipole to stay in this direction than rather than
If I make an optical trap, it will track the center of mass motion. Okay, and there will be an electric field oscillating at the optical frequency. But the excitation of these dipoles that we talk about here are the rotations of the molecule and then the microwave regime. So in this sense, there's no coupling in the sense against that you're talking about.
Okay, well, I'm looking at the number.
I think the wall is a real electric field,
So the picture is that the dipoles are all lined up. They're ordered.
Uh-huh. But that's, of course, for very strong dipole moments. Yeah.
Right. And so that's supposed to come from the interactions.
Excuse me?
The ordering is because of the dipolar interactions.
Yes.
So for electric
field. Of course you have an You have an external field to line there. Yeah. I'm sorry, I missed
that. So then that fixes the orientation.
Yes. But of course, in principle, if you have a lot of dipoles very close to each other, they also induce these kind of dipole interactions. But I don't think that's in the region that we can do it here. Yeah. Sorry.
Conservation rules,
like,
you know, the optimal dipolar conservation?
Conservation rule, like what?
Like, spin is usually conserved from the traps.
No, if you have an external field, then you just break it.
So you throw
it out? Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And when you have a collision, then it just relaxes. Yeah.
I think that in helium, a rough minimum can be linked to
atomic length scale.
Yeah. Rings actually, some can consider a special excitation.
Uh-huh.
Is it an analog of this one?
No, I.
Or it just be just.
You mean? Well, I think they just found its name and feel it is interesting. Well. And if your dipole moment is stronger, then you can have its ability. Yeah, it can also. Yeah. Well, I don't think it gives, deeper meaning than that.
The light scale is very different also. I mean, he says that this light scale is determined by the thickness.
Yes, by the thickness, yeah.
The usual roton minimum and the.
Yeah, different by atomic, yeah, nature. Like.
The spacing of the particle.
Yeah, that I agree. Yeah. So of course there are also some work like called vertex in. Yeah. That just means field result, the Bogle Lipov transformation will give you this thing. Yeah. Okay, and but. I have to say that probably all of these works are based on this kind of pseudo potentials. But these pseudo potential works, which is just only near the, any resonance. So that's basically in weak interaction limits.
So, AS in this formula would depend on the dipole, is that right?
In principle, yes. Yes. Uh-huh. So, but I think most of this theoretical calculation here just based on the sum. Without dipole moment, okay, and assume it is not changed due to the spawn dipole, yeah. But in principle, it will, yeah. Okay, then I would like to talk about some work beyond Bose-Einstein non-condensation. Say, for example, the Wigner crystal in 2D system. If we put dipoles in two-dimensional and apply electric field to line it up. Perpendicular to the.
Why would you call it a Wigner crystal? It's not really a Wigner crystal.
Well, but I think it's still by the same mechanism. Well, you just balance the interaction.
The crystal has quite different properties from this dipole.
Yes, I know. Yeah, okay.
But it's
okay.
Not really a crystal, it's a pseudo crystal.
What's cool?
Well, it's a long range
order. But here's short range, right? So I said, so because the interaction is 1 over r cubed, right? So this kind of crystal occurs only when density is very high, so that you can overcome the kinetic energy. So is that what you want to address?
No, I mean in terms of the, if you look at the sound clause, for example, here, you just get omega proportion to q.
Okay.
And being a crystal, it might have something from the long range order, which is omega squared proportion to q. So
that it's different. Okay, I see. Okay, thanks. So probably that's not a good name, but okay. Okay, another thing that many people are interested in is the super solid state in optical lattice, or especially 2D, two-dimensional optical lattice. So we might have, okay, it's very, okay. We can have such kind of Hamiltonians, right, with unside U, which is due to, I mean, direct interactions, and also interaction between neighboring sites or next neighboring sites. So people have some kind of phase diagram calculated by Quantum Monte Carlo.
Sorry, what's the Q? What's the lasers coming out?
What's Q?
What's that Q doing there? In the middle? Is this in the fishing rod?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's just atoms.
Yeah, lasers.
Yeah, different lasers coming from different directions. Yeah, sorry. I think everybody knows this figure. Okay.
That's the condensate.
The condensate, and you raise the optical lattice. Yeah.
Well, the big ball, that's the condensate inside the lasers.
Yeah.
The lasers.
Okay.
Did you really mean the laser in the direction that you point to? Or
No. That's just, steal it from.
The triangular
lattice
you're making here, is this what you mean?
No, okay, sorry.
No.
I just take a picture of optical lattice.
This is a very old...
Yeah, very old way, okay.
It was generated, I think, by Steve Ralston probably 9 years ago, that probably ought to be pulled off of every website where it could possibly be found.
Yeah, that's where I found it. So, forget about these pictures. So, yeah, then look at, assume you have 2D optical lattice and different 2Ds, okay, and have square lattice. Of course, this super lattice can, well, I think that's the easiest way people can do it theoretically.
I don't think it makes any difference.
Yeah, of course, I mean, externally it doesn't make difference, but theoretically.
You're right.
This is an old phase diagram, isn't it?
There's no phase diagram. That's a phase diagram.
Well, the cosmology of a super solid phase.
That's super solid phase. SS. So that's a density as a that's not a chemical potential. Density as a function of V. Assume our U is very large, but finite. Okay. Basically, you can expect some super solid phase when density is a little above half filling, and of course surrounded by phase separations. So it's very dangerous phase. Okay. And some superfluid phase, probably charge density wave. So that's, I mean, there are also different ways proposed to make such kind of super solid by say excited to higher bands or whatever. But dipoles probably is a good one. What? Yeah, square. Most are on square lattice, but it's also proposed that it can be realized in triangular lattice. Yeah, by Prokofiev.
These A's are actually dipoles, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, no. You just assume it's
a... I guess I have to go back to the original question. If I'm in 2D and 3D, then 2D...
Well, 2D assume the dipole moment is perpendicular,
But the fact that we have very much, the fact that we have 2D, that means I have my laser in the third direction is very large. So this, therefore the cell that's confining the atoms is not spherical anymore. And it's very painted, like it's higher the confinement, the more painted like you have. And therefore it does have an effect on, I mean, it's just hard to imagine that not in fact an effect on a dipole.
Okay.
Moreover, how do they calculate the continuity? Yeah, right, so if,
I don't, okay.
I think really it's solving two body problem for on the lattice is to be.
You mean harmonically turn on to the other?
Oh. And also just to me, I think that there must be a very high strong orientation effect of the dipole.
I see.
It can be.
The mm-hmm. Yeah, your question is about how to construct correct model to describe the system.
Whether this is relevant at all for useful reality?
Well,
probably. If you want to find effective Hamiltonian for these molecules in a 2D lattice, and there is every cell is not round, it's a pancake. With a very flat pancake, and then now that consider the orientation effect on the pancake, I can't talk about tunneling the pancake.
Okay.
I mean, that's all I'm saying. I mean,
I see.
Thanks. These all ignore everything.
Yeah, I agree. They just ignore it. Yeah.
I didn't understand the point. What's the relevance of this to the dipolar system?
Yeah, oh, because they assume, okay, that's the operators for dipoles. Okay, then assume the dipole moment is perpendicular to the layer. They assume that the direction is fixed.
That's the way to generate next year's.
Yes, right. That's the only thing. So you can, if you have other ways to generate it, then you can still use this Hamiltonian.
But the dipoles don't sound like one of R cubed, so if I add this thing next to nearest neighbor?
It will stabilize the Schoenberg solid, yes. Uh-huh. I think I should find another fifth diagram for dipoles. But what Jason said probably is a more realistic question. And another thing interesting is about the spin texture things. That's what Ryan said before. I mean, if we have a for typical, I think it doesn't work. No. Okay. Anyway, for a typical interaction between two magnetic atoms, you have exchange interaction between two spins, right? But you also have some dipole-dipole interaction, although it is very weak. Okay. But this kind of dipole-dipole interaction will break the spin conservation. Therefore, theoretically and also experimentally found is that if you confine magnetic dipoles, for example, in some geometry, and initially you apply some magnetic field to line it up, then eventually just turn it up, and then turn it off at t equal to zero. Then eventually the spin will just change as a function of time, because the dipole moment will break the spin conservation. You transfer the angular momentum to orbital parts. So that seems looks very interesting, and that's also observed in 2D.
These
timescales
are for rubidium or something?
Yeah, for rubidium.
Jason. This is an experimental statement?
Experimentally, I think they also found it in Berkeley School. Yeah, they found such kind of.
Dynamics?
Yeah.
Well,
what?
It's not really the dipole, but dynamics.
The story was that I think hasn't been published, that the sun will stay. Zero, which is not the ground state, and then he see the whole thing developing with some texture. After some scale, and the whole thing go with an entirely different to the form. So there's a time scale which he identified as a dipole time scale, but then the whole thing is very messy. So it's
okay.
But you can say there is a time scale.
Okay.
Milliseconds due to the exchange interaction, due to the spin interaction the first time. So
the dipole interaction.
No, due to the first time.
Okay. That's the spin part.
Much faster than this.
I see. But if initially the spin are polarized, then in principle it doesn't change to other.
In the experiment, they all start off in the n equals 0 state.
Yes, right.
So they can then scatter into plus or minus 1 states.
Okay, I see.
The texture that they see, but the scattering is described by that first term.
Okay, I see. Okay, thanks. Well, I just said I need to read this paper more carefully. Well, another thing is that dipoles near more states. That's the work by Hood. And if you put dipoles inside 1D, of course, they also assume this kind of Hamiltonian, right? and they found a new phase between the superfluid and the charge density wave and the mono-insulator regimes, which they call strain phase. What?
The other is the thorium.
Oh.
What's strain state?
Well, no, that's not the same paper. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, sorry, just this thing. Okay. Maybe you can explain it.
So the new phase is state that's characterized by string correlation functions in the density. So basically, you can understand it best with analogy to a spin one chain.
Mm-hmm.
So a Mach insulator at integer filling is more or less analogous to a spin one chain with anisotropic interaction, and the U is like an SZ squared, a single anisotropy term, and V is gives you a SZ-SZ interaction. And you know that this state supports Haldane gap characterized by non-decaying string correlation, while the Mach insulating state has exponentially decaying string correlations in there. So the transition between the Mach insulator and the charge density wave phase is indirect. It goes through this intermediate Haldane phase.
So what's the Hamiltonian? Is the nearest neighbor interaction?
Yeah.
And then.
No, actually, we calculated with further range interaction. I'm just making the analogy.
I think that the same as the previous one.
We calculated it with Rose Hubbard model with dipolar interactions and also nearest neighbor interactions. It doesn't matter so much, although dipolar interactions make the Haldane phase more robust.
So how large?
So
that's V over T. Okay.
So I think there is a lot of neat stuff about this phase and how you detect it. I mean, that's subject to different topics.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
It's all integer filling there.
It's all.
Yeah. And another recent paper is by Santos et al. I mean, it basically considered 1D layers and see how the lobe of the mono insulator changes due to another pairing superfluid state. So that's their recent paper in that year. Okay, so just let you know. Okay, and another interesting thing is that for laser induced dipoles in optical lattice, I have to confess that I don't know too much about this. But basically, you just use laser. If initially you prepare molecules in the rotational ground state and use some microwave or different lasers to excite it to some higher energy level, then you can make it dipoles in different directions. So that's some exotic superfluid to mono-insulated phase transitions. So for these kind of things, in mono-insulator regions, you can have magnetic odor due to these kind of dipole-dipole interactions, even in the superfluid phase. That's the work by Ryan and Eugene Demler. You know. Another thing that I don't understand very completely is that proposed by Peter is that how to manipulate dipoles to make it to be like a spin half or spin one systems, so that people can manipulate that to do quantum simulation. So Peter, would you like to explain more about this?
It will take longer than this time now.
Okay, that because the paper looks very different from what I could understand. So I take too much time to say
what's
that.
The problem of dipoles and the lattice and what's the meaning?
No, the basic ingredient is that they say that they have molecules in a multi-insulator state and they have spin, and then you would like to introduce a spin-spin interaction. So you write down the most general spin-spin interaction model, which can be anisotropic and so on, having a certain kind of a spin texture, by using microwave fields, exciting, and then using the spin rotation coupling, which is one of these fine structures that you find in the molecules in the rotation state, one is able to engineer the most general spin-spin model.
Does dipole interaction play a role?
Yes, it is the way to, where you engineer these long-range interactions. So it's a coupling of the spin to the rotation, but the rotation is the electric dipole moment, and they interact via dipole-dipole.
So in principle, you also have a spin coupling for longer distance, right?
No, it turns out that in this case, these effects, you can even engineer the finite range.
I see.
For that?
Uh-huh. So only nearest neighbor.
Yeah, because, you know, when you have these excited molecular curves, if you have a certain distance, you can choose one of them with a frequency, but if you go to a longer distance, it would be of resonance.
Ah.
So you can engineer both the spin texture, like in the case of a Kidayev model, you can do this Kidayev model with these kind of ideas, but also the range. You can make it, you know, anisotropic in different directions and so on.
I see.
It's the most general spin one happening.
I see. So I think you have two papers on Nature Physics, so you can look at it. Okay, so now just briefly, let me, what time is it? Okay, to talk about my work about dipole bilayer systems. Okay, I also assume that you have an external field to polarize the dipole. And so that's basically in 2D systems. You have double layers. Okay, the motivation is following. If we just look at their interactions, so that's the intralayer interactions and that's the interlayer. You can see that for interlayer, it is attractive when these two dipoles are close to each other, and repulsive on the other hand. But the magnitude of attractive interaction is much smaller than a repulsive interaction. So in general, that we don't expect too much about these systems to see the exotic state. However, that's just a misleading thing, because this kind of picture is based on some Bohm approximation. That means you do not consider the higher energy virtual state. So in other words, we also need to include in some virtual excitations to see the truly low energy scattering problem. Okay. So if we do that, we can develop some kind of pseudo potential approach. That means just consider.
When you say that within Born, you're assuming the space you, between two layers is too well. Larger than,
did
you get that effect?
No, that's nothing to do with this. That's just their interaction, right? But if you want to consider the low energy scattering problem, low energy physics, it's not enough to use their interaction.
But I'm asking why it's so different.
Well, just because the lattice spacing, yes.
Okay, just
the
far part.
Okay, yeah. Well, yes, I assume that the width of the layer is pretty small. Okay. So you can develop some pseudo potential approach. Basically, that's a phase shift, okay, which is also a function of k, but we can take a limit when k goes to zero or some long wavelength cutoff. Then by using this kind of that's also developed by Huang Yang before. Okay, 0 and 1 means the intro and the interlayer scattering. If we calculate the two-body problem, and then to calculate the phase shift as a function of U0 is basically, I define here is the dipole moment energy compared to kinetic energy. Therefore, we can see this solid line is the interlayer interaction, and this dotted line is the intralayer. So we can see that when U0 is small, that means when dipole moment is very small, well, the intralayer is larger than interlayer interaction. However, when U0 is larger than to some order of 1, and we see some shape resonance. So that means the attractive interaction between dipoles in different layers can have some bound state. So that's called shape resonance in 2D. So in other words, when U0 is larger enough in these regions, that you cannot say that interlayer interaction is small. Okay, it actually is very strong. So,
why don't we have 1 over log?
Yeah, in principle it has log, but you always have some finite size, so it will be cut off.
What is the physically the horizontal axis?
It's
you bring the layers closer together, or what are you doing?
You mean on this axis?
Yeah.
That's U0. That's basically dipole moment compared to kinetic energy. That's the only. I mean, dimension is.
But can still d? How small does that d have to be for?
But change small d, then you change U0.
Right.
Yeah. So you can change the interaction.
I'm trying to get a sense of how close the two.
Numerically.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I would say that for typical, if you have 1 d pi, for example, for polar molecules, then you can have it around, say, micrometer. So that's a reasonable value for optical lattice. So that's not too close. But if you want to use magnetic atoms, then probably this, you cannot get very strong U0. Yeah. Okay. So that's very simple. And here that's the radius. That's the finite size radius, the condensate size. That's a function of U0. Okay, that's U0. Okay, I estimated by mean field equations, and you expect that there will be a shrinking in the middle. Well, but in the middle, probably the mean field calculation is not variable. Yeah, in XY direction. So, experimentally, you can observe such transition by just measuring the size of the condensate. And in these regions, because these dipoles form, then these two molecules form bound states, so they have only repulsive interaction. Therefore, the condensate suddenly increased. So I expect that the condensate will just change by changing the dipole moment.
The whole situation is physically very similar if you got electrons and holes in two layers.
So yes, that's very similar. Yeah. Yeah, that would be very similar.
Analogous.
Yes, but they have dipoles only in one layer. You mean for their two layer have only dipoles in like in one layer,
yeah, the electron hole. And the hole and
yes, it's a dipole.
To form an exciton.
Yes.
And then this condenser
yeah, right.
One kind of dipole.
But here is combined.
Yeah, just one kind of dipole. They need four layers to form this two dipoles. Right. I agree. Excuse me. But maybe what you want to mention is that in 3D system for axon in 3D, the axon can also have some bound states. Yes, so let's call it some drop or axon liquid, something like that. Yeah. But they don't want to see them. Well, another more interesting thing is about Schrodinger case state in this system. Okay. For this phase shift, as a function of U0. Let's look at it in this region. In this region, we have a strong interlayer potential compared to intralayer. Here, G0 means intralayer, and G1 means interlayer. So that's an exotic interaction not available in most solid-state systems. Because if you have just Coulomb interactions, usually the interaction between two wires or two layers are much smaller than interaction in the same layer. Okay, so why we can have Schrodinger case state? So if we just write down some very simple, you can say some effective Hamiltonians, we forget about the high energy excitations, just look at the ground state. Okay, so you can have interaction like this, and now I also added some tunneling between these two layers, okay, because that would make it more richer. And we can try this kind of wave function, which is just a linear combination of one atoms in m atoms in upper layer and 2n minus m atoms in the other layer. And that's the calculation as a function of, okay, the different curve means different value of delta g, g1 minus g0. Okay, so for delta g is small, basically it peaks in the middle, so say for m is equal to 200. So that means you have an equally population between two sides. However, when your G1 is larger enough, it basically splits into two sides. Okay, that means you have either particles in one layer or all particles in the other layer through the tunnel. So if you just...
Can I ask you, I mean the physics of this is completely equivalent to having a Johnson junction?
Yeah, well...
Being able to flip the sign of these interactions. I mean, we looked at some of these things some time ago.
Yes, I know.
There was actually that it's very hard to make this kind of head state because if you want to prepare them, you're exponentially sensitive
to the distance.
These things. And so I'm not sure how realistic that is.
Well, I think the difference, okay, I know what you mean, but the difference is that for here, that's the, a kind of ground state. So if you, the way to prepare.
Well, in the other case, it was also the ground state. The question was how you go there, you know?
The way I think is that, okay, if you can cool the dipoles in strong dipole interaction limits, then reduce the dipole from the other way.
I guess
so you basically just...
He has, let's say, maybe
100 or something, 500 atoms of each layer, maybe you can do it. It's 10 to the 5 is hard.
Well, it doesn't have to be.
I would be pleased to think with 10.
Yeah, it would be tough, but then, yeah. I guess the right question is that if I put in any small external calibration.
Yeah.
I mean, the physics is always that you have some system which is attractive and it wants to collapse into the glob and the vacuum. So you've just got a superposition of glob here and glob here. But the question is, are you ever going to see that?
Well, yeah, that's very similar, but okay.
To make it right now, because you know there will be the plus and the minus state, and you will have, you know, exponentially closed energy.
I have to say, yeah, that's, I agree, that's not very easy, but
then one could call it phase separation in a sense.
Well, in some sense it can be called phase separation because it just all particles in the other state, but not that's phase separation in the x y direction. Yeah, because I compared it and see that this is
lower energy. If this can be found, it's very neat and it's nice.
Well, that really depends on the gap between this state and the energy state. So, okay. And okay, well, I just talk about the phase transition to the cat state. So that's the number of variations of the function of this delta G for different number of particles. So if we have more and more particles, it looks like a phase transition. So we can actually use the spin model to write a sine-effective Hamiltonian and assume that because the number of particles is large, so we can use classical spin and derive some Ginsburg Landau type equation and show that it is a kind of second order phase transition to case state. Okay, then some other problems about the phase separation or not, but we can show that this kind of phase is energetically unfavorable compared to case state. Because you need additional kinetic energy for the kink. Yeah. And how to observe the observation is very simple. Because
in your cat state, it's uniform.
Uniform, yes. Yes. And to observe it is it's quite easy because when all atoms in one or the other there, you don't have interference pattern. So initially, if you prepare a system, you have stay like in this region. In farthest regions, you can still have interference pattern because you just have two condensates. However, when you reduce the dipole moments, then I expect if you are in that state, then interference pattern becomes weaker.
It is in fact. So I think the interference pattern will be very different whether you are phase coherent or not phase coherent. But I think the issue would be that the post in a regime where you do have a cat, the question whether one can distinguish whether you have a true cat or whether you have
I don't know.
Because interference would not able to tell you because of the, you need an in-body operator to tell the
Right? Yes, in principle you need some higher order correlation.
Very high order.
Okay. Okay, that's just for bilayer thing. And that's a phase diagram, I think I can skip it. And another thing for multilayer, I think that's even more interesting. And if we have dipoles all perpendicular to these layers, and of course, when dipole moment is stronger enough, we expect that these dipoles might line up as a chain. And this is like a wave function for each dipole. And we expect that wave function in the end will be larger than the wave function in the middle because you experience more attractive interaction between from other dipoles, right? So that we call it dipole chain liquid. So for this kind of we can use a tri-wave function to calculate the binding energy for these chains. What we found surprisingly is that this is for two chains, I mean for two dipoles, and that's for many dipoles. If the dipole is larger enough, I mean, the binding energy becomes lower and lower. So in other words, we just need very small dipole moment to have longer chain. The reason is that we have not only nearest neighbor interaction, but also interaction between next nearest and so on. So the interaction goes down if you have longer chain. Therefore, that will give a very interesting physics. That's we also calculate the thermodynamics of the potential function of the system. So that's M is the length of the chain. Here, NM is the number of chains for length M. And in higher temperature, we found that you have a decay like this. That's because when temperature is higher, the entropy dominates, then your most of chance are very short.
What is the temperature?
No temperature here. Different curves correspond to different temperature.
I understand that you say this curve is for at final temperature.
Yes.
I was wondering what temperature that you were thinking of.
Or what scale? Yeah. Okay, basically, say, of order of the recoil energy of the this kind of particularities. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so that's okay. And that's basically determined by the binding energy. So okay. Another thing that when temperature is lower down, and we found that you have some non-monotonic distribution of the chain number. And when temperature is even lower, that because the energy dominates the system, so the longer chain begin to form the condensate. So we have the condensate of the longest chain. Of course, here I haven't considered excitations of the chains, but I will do it later. Okay, so that's why we call it dipole chain liquid. Okay, that's a TC as a function of U0. Assume that no interaction between chains. That when TC is smaller than some critical value, basically we just have dipoles in different layers. But when they form chains, so because the chains, the mass of chain becomes larger, so the TC suddenly decreases, then eventually increases. So I think that's something experimentally can observe, because if you have zero dipole moment, you see condensate. But when you increase the dipole moment to some very small number, well, that's not, it doesn't have to be very large, then you find the condensate peak just disappear. So I think that's something that people may be interested in to see. That means you have a stronger combination of chains. So of dipoles.
I try to understand the monology. You say,
yeah.
Begin with, I have a dipole, I have a condensate.
Yes.
The dipoles are already aligned.
Not strictly aligned. They are aligned, okay, but not bound.
Okay. And then the transition will go from the super fluid phase to what?
To normal phase. That in this region, that's normal phase.
I see, but they are still.
Yeah. At zero temperature, for example, at zero temperature, there's no transitions. That's always condensate. But at some finite temperature, okay, when dipole moment is larger, you form a chain, but the chain doesn't want to condensate. At such high temperature. They want to condensate at even lower temperature.
I see. So if I move up and down on the vertex axis, the length of change changes, essentially.
Move what?
The temperature.
Yeah. The distribution changes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So, okay. And we can also include excitations. So basically, that assume that strong dipole limits and you allow the excitation about the wires. And you get some excitation spectrum. And what we found is that TC, as a function of U0. It decreased TC a little bit.
So basically, the longer the chain, the more weaker it is, and they
deplete the condensate. Yes, deplete condensate. So in other words, if you have infinite long chains, basically you don't have condensate at all, of course. And so we believe, so that could happen even at zero temperature, but that's not the more insulated transition. Okay. So, in principle, excitations can be also included, but it is not valid here because this kind of expansion will not be valid in small dipole limits. So that's a possible phase diagram we think is that for small dipole moments we have dipole BEC and then we have a chain BEC. That's what we saw before. Then if dipole moment is stronger, probably we can have some kind of maybe not called weaker crystal, but some crystal of chains. And in between, probably we can have some super solid phase or not. I don't know, but just that's very interesting to see. And for higher temperature, I think that's something also very exciting, is that if your chains can vibrate, and then you might have some gaseous phase or some dynamic phase or what I don't know. But still, that's something to explore.
That's dipole interaction.
Yeah, dipole, basically dipole interaction. So, okay. And, well, I think I should stop here because I have another thing about double layer things. Well, but I would like to
summarize the basis.
Okay. That's okay. Let me tell you why I think double wire will be interesting.
Wires.
Okay. Because you can say you can align the dipoles along this y and z direction with an angle theta. The why it is interesting is that if you just choose, if you write on the intra wire and inter wire interactions, you will find that if you choose some special value of theta, okay, which can terminate the intra wire interactions, so that you can have a strong inter wire interaction compared to intra wire. So I think that's also not available in people's solid state systems. So, okay, so that's why it's interesting. And here I use the Lagrangian liquid theory to describe it. That's a theta, angle theta as a function of a piston. Okay, except for the spin density wave in z directions and also triplet superconductor phase. Okay, we can also have another spin density wave that's called spin density wave in xy or planar spin density wave or spiral phase. So that means you have an interlayer coherence, and this kind of coherence, the phase may rotate as a function of distance. So that breaking both the rotational symmetry and both the U1 symmetry, the translation symmetry and also gauge symmetry. So that's why I think this phase is interesting. And we also do some calculation in strong coupling limits, but probably I should stop here. And okay. So I think probably that's it, and maybe I just think that this area is very interesting because there are so many parameters that you can tune and to observe. But of course, finally, maybe they have some details that we don't know yet. Even the Hubble model itself is not good enough. So yeah, I don't know. Anyone have some idea? Well, Jason, if you like to.
It's very good. I haven't had many of this before, but it's very useful for me.
Okay, thanks.
But yeah, I mean, I think when you start to experiment, then you will find more things to do.
But I think, you think probably the confinement effect will be very serious.
I worry about that, but we need to look at it. I haven't really looked at it in the heart.
I see. I think most people never thought about this before. Okay, thanks. Or any comments or things that you, or which parts you find interesting and probably in the review before? Okay. Teaching or some others. Okay.
So you said that people study vortices?
Yes, some dipole vortices. Well, I don't know. I mean, I have not I don't have much impression about what new physics is talking about, or any people here know that.
There's no extra symmetry, so it's just like the
U1
superfluid phase that you make the
vortices
on, I guess.
You still have vertex, of course, but how the long-range interaction can modify this vertex, I don't know. So probably I should also include it. But I think that, to make it a vertex, usually that's technically difficult to choose, especially in quantum Hall region.
Was the Wigner crystal or the crystal equation two together that's the repulsion X?
Yes. So.
And does it have
Why is the first order transition
to crystal phase? What's your question?
Well, no, I'm just.
You wonder the transition.
To the proton as you go to this, as you go to the crystal.
Oh, you mean increase the dipole moment?
Yeah.
Peter and Peter they had a paper recently. They studied just one layer, and all dipoles perpendicular to the layer, and increased the dipole moment. From the numerical results, I think they just find the first order transition.
Nozier has this nice idea that you could look for a kind of liquid crystal spinodal line, which will correspond to when the proton minimum goes to zero, which I mean.
Well, I also did, yeah, you mean the how what will happen when this photon minima goes to zero? You mean this?
Yeah, I mean, you crystallize first, but if you could do some time dependent experiment.
Well, I think the situation is that when this mode becomes soft, it almost becomes unstable, the system just collapses. So.
Well, I mean, not the idea is
well,
that is the crystal.
That is the crystal.
Well, okay.
That's supposed to be the real proton. That's a strange.
Oh, well, okay, but is it different? Well, I guess, is it different length scale, isn't it?
Yeah, crystallization, but if you don't have confinement, so this crystallization just make it worse, right? Because it will cannot be trapped.
Okay, that's what
you're doing. Okay, but anyway, that's still. Because I also work hard on this and wrote a minimum, but I found that it just becomes unstable and hard to be other phase.
Stable to what?
To collapse.
L0
then? Excuse me?
L0?
You mean the scale?
Yeah, what is that L0?
Oh, L0 is the width of the thickness of basically the harmonic radius along the z direction. Yeah.
So the one we think that way.
Okay, thanks.